Well, everyone, welcome back to the oh, there we go. one would think it's April Fool's. No, and welcome back to the Stock Grid, everyone. Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks. Good to be here. So some of those things come together at the last second. Was just finishing on my tax return.
Same here. So look at us. Last minute taxes. That is a nice little note to push that off to everyone else. It's tax day. It's also my cousin's birthday. That's why I always remember the two. But yes, well, it sounds like we're both ready to roll then. How's your weekend so far?
It was good. I mean, it was like, it's really nice here, and it's kind of frustrating to be stuck in, working on a tax return when it's like this nice outside. Started watching the Fallout Amazon show, which is like immediately gripping. I think they've got a real hit on their hands. And then this will be a busy week here, going to Houston for the CSCMP meeting. So I'm going to be a speaker there. I think we're going to, Astros game as well. And then it's be a busy week of earnings. It's kind of like the bellwether week. So like J.B. Hunt reports, CSX reports, Procter & Gamble reports, and it's kind of tend to be a bellwether for the other names in the space. So a lot going on this week.
Yeah, it'll be a busy week then for that editorial team for sure. And we also, of course, have our newsletter. So everyone watching, make sure that you head to freightways.com, click on the top of the page. You'll see the stock out. It's actually right there perfectly centered. So it's almost, of all the newsletters, it's impossible to miss. And of course, speaking of events, with that first newsletter you get, you'll get a link a discount code and a link to our event as well. So make sure you use that and join us in June. I'm getting really excited about that. I mean, it seems like it's far away, but you know how our events, they come up pretty quickly. So it'll be nice to see everyone live in Atlanta.
Yeah, I haven't been to that venue before, but I think we've had past events there. So it should be a good one. So what do we have to talk about today? Some of the topics that I have highlighted here are a lot on Lunchables and those things, which, potentially, dangerous there. Dollar store companies struggling. And we have a survey of CPG and retailers, which is pretty illuminating. And if we have time, talk about Zach's Chart of the Week article, which I think is pretty relevant for CPG companies that move refrigerated. But with that, let me get into our first topic. And I'm going to call this topic, Lunchables Are Disgusting, which I get that from Rachel Premack. So this the news this last week on Lunchables caused me to revisit an article that Rachel wrote last year. And it was an article she wrote, shame she's not, publishing anymore, at least not to my knowledge. But a couple of just really great quotes, a couple of one-liners here. So a quote from this article. The thing about Lunchables is that they're kind of disgusting. While writing this article, I had very specific flashbacks to how some of these things tasted and found my face crumpled up in disgust. So she had that kind of one-liner. And then she also called them, quote, the most MBA-friendly product to ever exist. Lunchables are because of just the way they can be packaged. You can take excesses of other types of food, and they can sit in a warehouse forever and aren't perishable. Yeah. And sort of goes from talking about that to talking about how, well, these are really unhealthy because it's part of what makes them such a logistic, darling, is that they're, don't perish, which it makes it, in order to not have it perish, they need to be sort of highly processed foods, which, as we're learning, is not terribly healthy. And I don't think anyone's maybe going to be shocked that these are not healthy, but still, you sort of go through the Consumer Reports, what they had to say last week, and it's still maybe kind of surprising they're just quite as bad as they are. So basically, if you haven't seen this, Consumer Reports found that Lunchables, contained lead and other contaminants, and most are just really high in sodium. They tested, Lunchables and the Kraft Heinz brand, and then various other. Brands, some of those are private label, like from Target. They said, quote, there's a lot to be concerned about. They sort of say, well, you don't want to regularly eat these types of things. They've been linked to increased risk of cancer. So very potentially high heavy metal content. And their chemist, the Consumer Reports chemist, Eric Boring, says he doesn't think anyone should regularly eat, you know, Lunchables or these type of highly processed meats. And they compared these to certain standards. I mean, not around the country, they compared them to California standards, because California is the one state that maybe takes a little bit more of a strict stance on what is allowed in foods as far as lead and heavy metals are concerned. And the Lunchables, they're all within the legal guidelines, but starting to bump up against what those legal guidelines are. So some of the Lunchables have as much as 74% of the lead allowance by California's standard. And a lot of them have 50% of the daily recommended allowance for sodium. And not only are those really high numbers, but you have to consider that this is the Lunchable, there's not a lot of food in there. It's only about 15% of the roughly 1600 calories that a typical 8-year-old would need. So as far as just a lot of bad stuff in a very small package, that seems to be what Lunchables are. Not exclusive to Lunchables. It seems like the other brands are just as bad. But then they go on to say it's caused problems it could lead to problems in adults, like, you know, hypertension and kidney disease. And then just in children, you know, developmental, you know, problems if children are eating too many of these things for their part. Kraft Heinz and Maple Foods, they are looking at ways to reduce sodium levels. And it's also worth noting, I mean, sort of last year, sort of the big news last year was that a lot of these Lunchables would be in school cafeterias, that they've struck up deals with a lot of school districts and states, counties, to put the Lunchables in the school. And you wonder if this is if that's going to continue going forward after all of this. I mean, even if they don't, you know, violate any of the federal guidelines, school districts can make their own rules and be more strict than the federal guidelines.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Thoughts on this?
Well, I was going to say it's interesting because they do say in there that they're using the California standard because there is no federal guidelines, right, for especially heavy metals in those foods. And it is quite concerning because, like you said, there's not a lot of food in these. And for just the audience out there who don't have the report in front of them, like, we're not talking about any of the Lunchables that come with, like, a drink or anything like that. So you got to think of, okay, what is your kid also consuming on top of this throughout the day? What are they also eating at home? I mean, the turkey and cheddar one that you would even think would be one of the more healthy ones if you had to choose one, is over 49% of their daily dose of sodium. So, yeah, it's pretty eye-opening, especially once, like, the report also gets into some of the more healthy alternatives, you could say. So, for instance, like the natural... definitely not organic, but labeled as natural from Oscar Mayer, still has, that's only 24% lead compared to some of them have up to 69% of the daily dose of lead that you can have. The sodium is still extremely high. And then they even go into like those P3 ones, which is interesting. Like, I take those a lot of times on the beach or if I'm going on a hike, and sodium is still extremely high in those as well. So, one I'd be interested to see if, especially with as much as lead has come up in conversations in food recently, if maybe we see some type of federal limit or some type of guideline on those moving forward. It's interesting in general too, because a lot of the ones that have meat in them, I'd be interested in just seeing in general what packaged meat or sandwich meat has in total. But for these, it seems like you're better off just making your kid a ham and cheese sandwich and calling it a day.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they bring up some good points about how, like, lower income kids might be more susceptible to this. And I think their parents may be less focused, less willing to, you know, and able to pay for fresher foods. And, you know, I do think ultimately this is going to lead to CPG companies having to do, you know, new formulas for some of these old things. I mean, some of these old products, they're not going to be what they're doing going forward. And then I would also think this increases more, you know, for demand on, you know, reefer, ultimately, and just more fresh food. I mean, you think that, you know, a lot of the, even the pet foods now are starting to be, you know, fresh. We wrote about that in the, was the check call or for the running on ice, you know, newsletter. So I think that's going to be a big thing going forward. You know, I want to move on to the next topic here, which is the dollar store category is struggling. And this is something that I've noticed just from reviewing, you know, analyst reports, from listening to conference calls, from even looking at my own stock portfolio, because like some of the best retailers, like if you go back a couple years, the best retailers in terms of just consensus of which are the best ones that are managed, certainly Costco, Walmart, you know, Amazon, and really Dollar General too. I mean, that was kind of one of the sort of the Wall Street darlings that was, you know, growing very heavily. That chart that we just had up showed Dollar General's stock price in black. Yeah, this is the Dollar General stock price is in black on the right axis, and the Walmart stock price is in blue on the left axis. And in Walmart's very close to an all-time high, whereas Dollar General, you know, is at $147.78, down from a high at $260, while the stock market itself is at a very high level. So just really sort of subpar, you know, performance there. And some of their competitors even doing worse. A Family Dollar shutting down 1,000 stores, 99-cent only. This is a West Coast chain, filed for bankruptcy. I guess the merger between Family Dollar and Dollar Tree never made a whole lot of sense because those are two different, you know, types of companies. And the Dollar General's, you know, growth, which is what, you know, the analysts have been previously paying for, the investors have been previously paying for when the stock was at its high. That growth rate has really slowed. You do wonder if it got a little bit oversaturated, where some of the analysts thought they should have stopped or slowed down the growth, you know, at about 17,000 stores. They went to 20,000 stores. And so some of the complaints that consumers have of, you know, companies like Dollar, their Family Dollar, you know, higher prices than really should be for a discounter, expired products, chronic staff shortages, just an unpleasant shopping experiences, boxes and aisles, things everywhere. And so I guess my question to you is what do you think is happening here? Do you think these stores are just kind of oversaturated? Do you think they're just not being as managed as well as a Walmart or an Aldi? Or do you think it's just lower end consumers just can't afford anything anymore?
It's interesting. There's someone they quoted in there talking about how I think it was actually a worker. Like, instead of adding more stores, focus on the stores that are already existing and bringing up their service quality. And I think I completely agree with that because, I mean, even the last time I was in a Dollar General, it was, I mean, we joke about it, but it's absolutely true. Like, there's usually boxes everywhere. So you're not even 100% sure you're looking at all the items that could be accessible to you as a consumer. They interviewed an employee as well who talked about, like, there's not enough time in the day for me to run the cashier to also continue to stock. And at some point, you know, when something becomes a running joke, you have to assume that the people leading the company also understand that about the company's culture within, not just the employees, but clearly what's started to flow into the consumer experience as well. And so I think you had that. I've also noticed like shrinkflation big time in some of the Dollar Generals I've gone to, where it's like, okay, these prices are a lot better, but the quantity that I'm getting is extremely low. And so if you mix those two together, I think it becomes a big issue. And this is back when it was a little bit more peaked. I lived in a downtown situation a couple of years back, and we had nowhere to buy like fresh groceries or things of that nature. And they put what they call their DGX stores, these like smaller kind of fresher food stores within a block of our downtown location. And I mean, everyone that lived downtown, that's where you went to grab like maybe a quick item that you needed to finish out a meal or something fresh produce wise for the day. So I've seen less of those added. I've seen probably more of like these larger stores added. And it concerns me because clearly we all understand like that if you walk into a Dollar General, Family Dollar, there's that perception that you're going to see. And I think if they focused on that and added more employees, and you'd likely see a turnaround in two, especially because the last one actually I went to as well was like promoting its self-checkout. So it's like gets to a point where there's like, who is there to help you as a consumer at the end of the day? So I've definitely seen a fall off in quality. Like I said, I think the shrinkflation has also not helped in their situations either.
Yeah, I was in a Family Dollar recently. I just needed something simple, and I was kind of on my way over near Love Field, and it was rough. It was a really long wait to check out. You know, right, there was things everywhere, and I didn't think it was really like a good value relative to other stores. Like, so I just don't really see the value proposition there. Maybe that's why the one that used to be across the street from Freight Waves and Chattanooga is no longer there. So, but you know, do think they're just kind of losing out to Walmart. And you go into Walmart, they really sort of stepped up their game. Like it doesn't feel like it's a low end store anymore. It feels like, Well, they have a lot of fresh foods and it's, you know, cleaner than it used to be. And this is kind of a better experience. So maybe we shouldn't be too surprised there the dollar stores are struggling. Want to move on to your survey results that you talked about just on the community segment. And so you talked about how large group was participating in the survey. So it was about 285 companies, CPGs, retailers. They talked about some of the challenges they're having, and they talked about things like consumer demand shifts, global events, inaccurate demand forecasts, sort of lack of real-time data, and siloed systems. And it strikes me that like some of those are just, they're kind of ongoing issues, but maybe the global events one has really been elevated the last couple of years. Is that your perception?
Yeah, and I think the Black Swan events and those global events are maybe showcasing more to these retailers how ineffective they are in collaborating with their partners too. I mean, even last week we had Daily Harvest on, right? And how often did Wesley talk about the fact that he is not only like close to the company hourly that's building their TMS systems, but how close they are to all their suppliers and farmers and really locked in with those individuals in order to make sure that the supply chain is moving smoothly for them. So I think you're 100% right. Like these events, I think, are showcasing, oh, there's some real big problems that we're seeing and our ability to quickly respond to these situations instead of kind of responding as the market allows them to over time. And I think, right, as we see more people get closer to those logistics providers or even the technology providers they have, hopefully those siloed systems start to let go, and there's more of that collaboration that I think, you know, any relationship, even personal ones, right? Like they'll stand the test of time in those really bad situations that we've experienced, right, over the last couple of years. But until, you know, we're talking and informally working together, I think you're going to continue to miss that. So not only, it sounds like a lot of that has to do with tech, but also just reporting on material shortages was a huge one, adjusting inventory based on quick changes in demand. And I think the forecasting risk is the big one here. Again, brought up last week in our interview with Daily Harvest as well.
Yeah, so all these global events, it can easily disrupt supply of some ingredient that goes into your CPG. The other thing that's interesting is what's really changed is on the social media side of things. It just seems to make demand for any particular product just so much more unpredictable.
Yeah,
because like a lot of social media influencers, like they could have millions of followers, and they're pretty clear that they bought all these items with their own money. They're not sponsored by anyone. They just have no idea what they're going to say, and a lot of them can be pretty convincing and really shift the sales in one way or the other. And based on what one person's opinion is, all of a sudden you have way too many of something or way too few of something. And I don't think that existed in traditional media, because traditional media, it's like they really want to be careful to not upset the company making those things, because they're going to lose access. But a lot of social media personalities just let it rip.
Well, in the trending aspect of things too, I mean, if we went back 6 months' time, a big trend that's popped up out of nowhere, I think I would say really since the wintertime, is like for Sephora's and Ulta's are these like young teens or almost teenagers, is like tweens, you could say, obsessed with skincare. And like a big brand that they all use is like a company called Bubble. I mean, could Bubble have guessed 6 months ago that like every 10 to 13 year old girl would want their stuff in their stores, in their hands, ASAP? Probably not. Just not. They wouldn't understand that that trend would have just popped off and existed. So I completely agree. I think it, like, you don't know how to, and we even say this in the work that we do, we don't know exactly the perfect formula that one of our shorts or posts are going to start trending and taking off. Right? Add Taylor Swift to it. That might help. But outside of that, like there's no for sure guarantee. So I think that's a big part of this too, is like sometimes things just start trending on their own for some unforeseen reason. And how do you as a brand judge that and prepare for that? And what, 3x times the amount of sales that you're used to during a period like today?
Yeah. And, you know, as much as we talk about AI, like, I don't think AI is ever going to predict like when some of these things are going to break out. So it does seem like maybe the idea is to sort of quantify, like, you know, what's the, you know, 95% of the probabilities you're going to have, you know, within a certain range based on other similar products. And then the other thing that it really elevates is the need for real-time inventory visibility and just data that you get on a continual basis, which is part of Walmart's strategy, is for, you know, they're monetizing some of that data, sharing some of that data they share with the suppliers for free. And then others, they kind of monetize it. But it lets the CPG companies know kind of in real time what's going off shelves, so they can make adjustments to their their manufacturing.
Yeah, definitely. I think I will say though, I think the fact that the social media is so keen on everyone's mind, I think it was like the highest rated area for those 280 different retailers and CPG companies looking at. I mean, they're going to have to get those social media groups, those departments are really going to have a lot of pressure on them to stack up against each other. So I get excited to see exactly how these brands are going to take advantage of that moving forward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. Just have a couple minutes here. Would sort of direct everyone to read Zach Strickland's article over the weekend on the refrigerated market, which I think is relevant for a lot of CPGs and retailers. And sort of the title of the article is "Refrigerated Market Flatlines in the Spring, Reefer Rejection and Spot Rates Fall Back to Earth." And so if we bring up this this Sonar chart, you know, why don't you walk me through, you know, what's happening there? And is this consistent seasonally with your experience in the brokerage world? So basically the reefer tender rejection index, it was in the double digits for a short period of time in February. Maybe that was the weather, I don't know. But now it's 4.5%. And the rates have fallen commensurately with that. Is that a typical sort of mid-April thing?
Honestly, it's interesting because a couple articles I've worked on over the last couple weeks, this is like the one area that a lot of brokers are like waiting to see take off, is that produce season. And no one's really seen it yet. Usually it happens a little bit earlier into like March and would for sure be, I mean, it's crazy. We talked about taxes at the beginning of this, but to see that it's already the 15th and this is what Sonar is showing, I think is pretty interesting of itself. Now, does depend on what you're pulling out of the ground, where you're growing. I mean, February, it could, of course, be in certain products, certain seasons. Of course, some areas in the United States are starting to unfreeze too. So you'll see other products start to come out as well. You know, for instance, like a lot of Michigan will move, like, especially construction season, bushes, more landscapey type of stuff that sometimes needs to go in refrigerator, some type of trailer to keep a temperature at a certain point. So I will say, I don't think we've seen it spike as much as we should yet. I was hoping to see a little bit more action in April, and maybe we'll see it closer to May as well. But yeah, the apple season should be taking off here soon, and I mean, yeah, it's again, pretty crazy to see these numbers. I would again expect it to be a little bit higher, especially can't believe it's already halfway through this month. That's crazy to look at and think about too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the companies say when they report their first quarter. If they're still optimistic on the second half, or is it just, you know, not seeing evidence of that. So,
well, especially like Robinson Fresh, right? Like that's going to be a good one to see and dive into exactly what they see in that sector. That's the one I'm really looking forward to hearing from them on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So check out those earnings reports and we'll write some of it up for the Stockout newsletter. And that's the time we have for today. Thanks for listening.